This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
She's not young, as you would say, for somebody who has the capacity. She's probably in her early 20s. And so by that point, she's kind of missed the boat. And that's sort of the point that her tía, her aunt, Rolly, is making, that she'd better just wisen up and put her feet on the ground and figure out what she's going to do with her life, because soccer ain't going to be it. And so it's not even a battle of wills exactly. It's about a battle for one's spirit, for one's soul, because basically what's happened to the aunt is that she's lost faith and the ability to dream. And what Guapa brings back to her and the family really is restores their ability to dream.
And she wants to follow her dream.
Exactly.
And I also love that it's about soccer, which is hugely popular, especially with Latino youth.
All over the world, and yeah. Latino youth, and for many in Latin America in particular, if not other parts of the world, it's seen as the way out. I was chatting with Jose Valencia, who plays for the Timbers now from Colombia, and he very frankly said, you know, in my country, you're either going to follow one path that's not very healthy and very illegal, or you're going to follow the path of a futbolista star, and that's your way out of poverty.
Well, I mean, it's so popular here in Oregon,
and
too.
And here, yes.
Because I was in Woodburn recently doing a story for Latino USA, and I asked, what do young people do for fun here? Because mm-hmm. it's a small town, and they say soccer on Sunday. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I'm really happy that we're going to be able to offer, thanks to the Portland Thorns, which is the new female team for the connected to the Timbers. Yeah, they're launching the season.
Awesome.
And two of our Thorns are going to be able to come in and do a clinic, a soccer clinic, on one of our Sundays.
As part of the
program. Yeah.
Well, let's delve just a little bit. We're going to have Jorge Huerta on pretty soon, but can you give us a brief plot of Guapa?
Sure. In essence, what we have is Tía Rolly, or Aunt Rolly, is the mom of two. There's four kids, but the kids are all in their early 20s. Three of them go to community college, and one is Guapa, the fourth, and she's shown up on their doorstep, in essence. And she represents this completely different way of looking at life and approaching life. And the other three are pretty clear that what they have to do is pursue this track and go through their college and get to where what they want. But they're already at differing levels of... They're kind of facing the reality that going to community college for them doesn't feel like they're really going to be able to achieve their dreams either. One in particular is just, he's pretty much rejecting that whole track. And so he's at a loss somewhat. And the mom is trying to keep them on track, thinking that this is the way to go, that dreams alone can't carry us. You have to put it into action. And Guapa comes in and just kind of rocks the boat. And in essence, it's not so much about whether they pursue one path or the other. It's the fact that the family has to come together to support each other and be behind each other's dreams, no matter what they are, in order for these kids to ever have a way to get out of where they are, to get toward what they want to achieve, whatever it might be.
This is a very contemporary play.
Yeah.
And it's a new play that's been honored by the National New Play Network to be one of 26 plays, I believe, that guarantee three productions
exactly.
for leading up to the world premiere production.
Well, this is
as
these,
part of the
these
world
are world premieres.
Yeah, each one
is considered a world premiere. There was one in Tucson at Borderlands Theater, one in Indianapolis at the Phoenix Theater, and now ours.
I
here
think that's
at
such
Miracle.
A great program, because often world premiere means death.
Well,
especially
exactly.
if you start it here in Portland, it
exactly.
doesn't really go anywhere else quite often.
People are excited about the world premiere, but then what you see is that they don't, new plays often don't have then their second or third production.
And they need that.
And they need that to grow. And it really has been a growth process.
That's awesome.
Throughout the year.
Well, Portland is perhaps spoiled because we've had Miracle or Milagro Theater for decades now and have had access to Latino theater. But I wonder if it's true for other cities in the country. So joining us right now is Jorge Huerta, Professor Emeritus of Theater and Dance at the University of California, San Diego. And also the country's leading expert on Latino and Chicano theater. Good morning, Dr. Huerta.
Good morning. Thank you. And hello, Olga.
Good morning, Jorge.
Thanks for joining us on Stage and Studio. So what stands out about Guapa in the canon of Latino American theater?
Yeah, you catch me at the moment that I'm preparing my lecture, you know, for Reed College.
Yes.
This coming weekend. It's an amazing play that sort of summarizes so many of the hopes and dreams. As Olga was saying, you know, so many of our plays in the Latino, Chicano canon have been about hopes and dreams, you know, and about obstacles and how to overcome those obstacles. And this play is just, you know, a marvelous culmination, I think, of everything that has been said by our playwrights and our theater companies across the country.
Well, how prevalent, or perhaps how popular, or how much Latino and Chicano theater is there in America right now?
And that is the question. It's an amazing movement. Chicano theater basically started with the Farmworkers Theater in 1965, and that exploded into a Chicano theater movement of Chicano theater companies, you know, starting with nothing, you know, basically performing on, initially on flatbed trucks, and then the other teatros were student-based, etc. And on the East Coast, we had the Cuban theater, exile theater community, and we had the Puerto Rican theater community. And in between, we had the theaters, Latino theaters in Chicago, and the University of Iowa had a Chicano theater in 1969. Wow. And in the Northwest, we had Teatro del Piojo that was founded in the late 60s at the University of Washington, and now we have Teatro Milagro, Miracle Theater, you know. As a professional company, it's come a long way, and so what I'm trying to synthesize is that we have theaters across the country that are producing plays in the community, for the community, by the community.
Well, you're doing a talk back at Milagro Theater after the 2 p.m. matinee on Sunday, March 24th. What are you going to talk about?
Well, you know, the post-show discussions are always determined by what has just ensued. You know what I mean?
So you want to gauge audience reaction.
By the production, you know, the play mm-hmm. that just happened, and perhaps, you know, we'll start with a question to the director, you know, why did you choose this play, perhaps, which is always such a silly question, but there has to be, you know, and there may be director's notes I haven't seen, you know, as to why Olga and the Miracle Theater Company thought this play was, you know, was worth producing. I know why. And I think the audience will definitely know why. It's just, you know, it's such a moving event.
Yeah.
And, you know, so then, and what I really prefer, what I love, and I did this when they produced Luis Valdez's first play, the founder of the Teatro Campesino, Mr. Valdez's first play, The Shrunken Head of Pancho Villa. What was that, Olga, about 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, it was for our 25th anniversary, so 4 years ago.
Yeah, and it was just a phenomenal production of the very first play from our community, and so it inspired all kinds of questions from the audience, you know, and that was exciting. The Miracle has built an incredible following of multicultural audience members,
yeah.
And it was very, very endearing to see that. It's a very bilingual play. This one is totally translated simultaneously in a very creative and imaginative way. It's not boring to hear the same line in two different languages, but the Shrunken Head is very bilingual intertextually, and so there were a lot of people in the audience who understood the humor in both languages,
right.
And what have you, and other people who appreciated it and you know, wished they had studied Spanish thoroughly so they could have understood. But no. So the audience reactions are always, for me, what inspires the post-show. You know, this is not to talk about, you know, what kind, do you think this play needs anything else? You know, when you have
right.
a reading of a play, that's to determine, well, what do you need? You know, what are you missing from the text? What didn't you understand? The playwright is there, you know, to listen and learn. And what Caridad has here is this incredible opportunity to see fully mounted productions of this wonderful play. And that's, you know, just really, really unique in the American theater to have that opportunity. But anyway, so back to the question at hand, the discussion will be based a lot, I think, on what the audience is, you know, how they're responding.
Well, on Monday, March 25th at 5 p.m. at Reed College for their Aloud series, you'll be talking about the many stages of Chicano theater from the fields of the arena, and that's at Psychology 105 at 5 p.m. at Reed College, and it's free and open to the public, and you can get more info at reed.edu/aloud. So we know what the topic is for. It's a thrill to have you here in Portland, the leading expert in Chicano theater, to talk about this, because I don't think we'd have this kind of access to somebody of your depth who has studied this, you know, throughout the history, really, of American Chicano theater.
Jorge has written the books on Chicano Latino Theater, really, from the beginning. He's been the great chronicler and critique of the movement and as it's grown and changed and evolved over the decades now. So it's a thrill and honor to have Jorge with us. And thanks to Reed, really, for making that possible.
No, it's my honor.
Well, Jorge. Dr. Huerta, I mean, in your estimation, how does Milagro Theater stand out in the country?
Stand out?
Yeah, as a theater company, a Latino American theater company.
You know, what's so amazing in this day and age is that all of the companies that I'm referring to and beyond have websites. Everybody has a website. In the early days, I jokingly say we communicated with two tin cans and a string. Mm. We did not.
Everybody
have
was cut off from each other.
Of the technology that everybody has. So you go on to the Teatro Milagro, Miracle Theater website, and you can see where it stands. It's a professional company, community-based professional company, producing wonderful plays from the canon. Just look at the history. How many years now, Olga? Is it 28?
We're going into 30.
Going into 30.
Yeah,
years,
next season will be our 30th
and so
season.
I consider them, and having seen them over the years and with their work and their evolution, I consider them one of the leading companies. But, you know, websites, you can't lie on a website. You show pictures of your productions and you see beauty.
Thank you.
You know, and you see that these people are producing an international canon, not just, you know, Chicano Latino plays. In fact, it's interesting because I'm culminating my lecture on Monday at Reed with this play because it's so important. And it's written by a woman who is not, quote-unquote, a Chicana. She's not of Mexican descent. She's a Latina. She's a real mix.
She's mixed race?
Well, she's Cuban, Argentinian,
Czechoslovakian,
Croatian.
Well,
ironically, that's mixed.
Yeah.
That's mixed. I don't know. Mixed culture.
And I have to brag. Caridad was one of our Master of Fine Arts playwriting students.
Oh, really?
She's a great success.
Oh, so this will be a really great connection for you to see her play here in Portland.
Oh, totally.
Caridad
totally,
won
yeah.
the Obie. Did you know that?
She
won the Obie Award this past year for lifetime achievement.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
and considering she's got many more years ahead of her,
and is she
too.
Coming here to Portland?
She will be coming later in the run. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
We're delighted.
Yeah, we had hoped to have her there, you know, this Sunday, but she couldn't make it. She's
work
the
schedule.
Most produced Latina playwright in the country. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, Jorge Huerta, thank you for joining Olga Sanchez and me on stage and studio. We're sort of running out of time here, but I'm really looking forward to your talks, and we really want to welcome you to Portland.
Thank you very, very much.
Thanks so much for joining us.
See you soon, Jorge.
Thank you very much for having me. See you soon.
So in the time remaining, Olga, tell me, we mentioned a little bit about Caridad Svich, who wrote Cuapa, and how she stands out as a playwright.
Well, her work is very poetic, very contemporary. She has a very modern voice. She's a musician as well, and a prolific writer, not just of theater, but of essays on theater and international. So she has a broad perspective from which she approaches her work. And so the fact that she wrote this play because of her passion, her family's passion for soccer and what it represented in her family. And so it really brings an international point of view to a very local story. And it's set in a Texas border town. And these are people who have borders within them and among them or separating them within the family. And so she's a very metaphoric and writer, but yet very grounded in the reality of this family structure. And so it's exciting writing to listen to. And it's been a great challenge and to delve into it and keep uncovering what's happening between this family. She doesn't write, you know, and now we look to the left. She leaves it open for interpretation, and it's been a very exciting process to delve into the work over the rehearsal process.
Well, Cuapa runs March 21st through April 13th. Previews are Thursday, March 21st at 7:30 p.m. and the show opens Friday, March 22nd at 8 p.m. and the show runs Thursdays at 7:30, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m. at Milagro Theater at 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. Tickets can be purchased from milagro.org, or you can call them at 503-236-7253. That's 236-7253. Olga Sanchez, Pleasure, 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 as always.
Always a pleasure.
You're always
Dime.
Informative, and you just fill so much knowledge to this community.
You're very kind.
And
thank
with
you,
your passion, you know, for Latino theater. I mean, I think it's just tremendous we have this as a resource in our community.
Thank you, Dime. I appreciate your support and you as well. It's a brilliant program you have going on here.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. If you missed any of this interview, visit stageandstudio.org. Up next, we'll find out what the City of Portland is doing to inform underserved communities about Portland's arts, education, and access income tax, including immigrants and those without internet access. The art tax passed by Portland voters last fall requires all adults 18 years and older to pay $35. You can apply for exemptions if you're below the poverty line. For individuals, that's $11,170, and for a family of four, that's $23,051. If there are two income-producing adults in that family, they need to pay $70. If the tax isn't paid, there is a $15 penalty, and after 6 months, it's an added $35 fine. And many immigrants and those who aren't internet savvy have had problems finding out information about this arts tax. Joining me now live is Dante J. James, the Bureau Director of the City of Portland's Office of Equity and Human Rights. Good morning, Dante. Are you there?
I am. Good morning to you.
Thanks for holding. I called the City of Portland helpline last Friday to find out how non-English speakers could help regarding the arts tax, and I was told the language is available, and I believe this would be appointment, but please correct me, is Russian, Spanish, Cantonese, and Mandarin. And with Portland's fast-growing international community, I wonder what steps the city is taking, you know, to help create more awareness and help immigrant communities and elders and those too poor to afford the internet access to find out more about the arts tax and how to pay for it.
Sure, and I certainly appreciate the question and the concern. It is a concern that the city is aware of, and my office is certainly aware of, and trying to be helpful in addressing. In trying to reach out to various organizations in the community to spread the word that focus on refugees and immigrants from the community and those that English is not their first language, or those who maybe not be so internet savvy, such as ERCO and CIO, and using the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to try to reach out through some of the neighborhood organizations and try to reach as many people as possible in as many ways as possible.
Well, are there plans? I mean, first off, a postcard in English was sent out in February, and I confess it didn't have much information on it, and it's something that
right.
I sort of went, oh, well, I guess I'll pay that later, and I just sort of chucked it. Mm-hmm. What will the letter mm-hmm. cover, and when is that going out?
The letter is going out at the end of this month. I believe March 27th is when it's expected to go out. Everyone should receive, around the first week of April, a letter detailing the tax and the expectations for payment and or exemption and how to request an exemption if you are, in fact, below the poverty line or did not make any income even though you're over 18. And so that should be received by the first part of April.
And are there plans to include other languages as well?
At this point, I'm not aware of any other plans, just because of the cost involved in doing that, and the way that it was structured when it was passed, only a certain amount of money could be spent to collect it, and that includes information and the outreach and everything else. So the Revenue Bureau is responsible for the oversight of the information and the collection, and so they are in some sense hamstrung by what they can spend to do that, which is why trying to outreach to as many bilingual and bilingual serving organizations as possible is the way that they're trying to do that.
Well, here's my concern, and I know you share this with me, is that someone who is not an English speaker gets this letter and they need to have it translated. They need to have access to somebody. A lot of immigrants mm-hmm. live in isolation. So it may take some time to do that, and they may not be able to do it by April 15th. So what happens then? Because by that time, they're going to have to pay
$50. Yeah, and so what I'll tell you is, as we speak, the city is in conversation to adjust that deadline. It's a conversation that has been maybe a long time coming, but it has been recognized. I think if you saw the newspaper yesterday, the mayor put out a press release mm-hmm. that they were going to take the council an opportunity to revise that so that the actual income requirement is changed. So it's still something that is being looked at to try to make it the most being done in the best way, I guess is the easiest way to say that. And so the changes are still coming out, and so I expect that there will be an adjustment in the actual date.
You think there will be an adjustment in the deadline then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I would just encourage you to, you know, keep checking back on the website, because I think those things are changing even as we speak. Those discussions are happening.
And, you know, to give out, I'll be giving out the phone number as well, but that's going to be really crucial for a lot of people.
Yes.
And,
absolutely.
And so, so regarding the penalties, you know, even after the hopefully with a delayed deadline, how are you going to handle collections and fines and enforcement?
Yeah, in my speaking with the Revenue Bureau again, they have spent most of their efforts in trying to get the information out, as well as receipt of all the money that is currently coming in. People are paying. And given the fact that collections aren't even a conversation until, or aren't scheduled to even happen until October, they truly haven't put any specific process in place to do that. So it's not really a conversation that I can have, though I'm not involved in doing it, but I know for a fact that they have yet to put in place a specific process by which collection or enforcement will be done.
Do you think there'll be any specific plans to go to radio stations, language-specific radio stations, too? Because that's how a lot of people, and KABU is really great about this, because we mm-hmm. represent so many different communities and different languages quite often. So definitely, you know, we can put the word out here, but it would really be helpful for people, you know, to be able to send information like that to language-specific stations, because that is the heartbeat of many communities.
Absolutely, and I think it's great that you're trying to spread this word, because I think it's an important message that, you know, everyone has to file something, either pay or an exemption. So everyone over 18 has to file or has to have something filed on their behalf, and that's the message I think that's most important is to get out. I don't want people to feel that because they are, you know, below the poverty line or didn't have to file state or federal income taxes, that they're automatically exempt and there's nothing they have to do. That's the wrong message. The message is really everyone over 18 who's lived in the city in 2012 has to file something or have it filed on their behalf.
And are those forms available online? I mean, they're all only available online, so most people would have to go to the city and then get the forms to fill out if they don't have online access?
They'll mail the form to you if you call the number. 503-865-4ART or 4278 is the number, and they will mail the form to you if you ask it.
Okay, well, that's great. That's great. But often, you know, that can also take time. I mean, you know, if you go down to the office and ask for it because perhaps, you know, you have language difficulties, then, you know, it'll take time to be able to do that, or it will take time for it to be mailed to you. So hopefully there will be a deadline announced soon as far as a new deadline announced soon. And do you expect that any day now?
I do.
Okay.
And so I would, as I said, just kind of be on the lookout for that as it's in transition. But I would expect it to happen, yeah.
Well, I know that this is a whole new tax and a whole, you know, new measure that was passed. And so obviously there will be things that need to be worked out. And right. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about that today, because it is a concern for all of us.
Mm-hmm. No question. And certainly, from my office's perspective in talking about, you know, equity and ensuring that things are rolled out, if you will, and services provided by the city in an equitable manner to everyone, it's something that I've been concerned about in trying to ensure that the message gets out in the way you're hoping that it gets out, and that everyone receives it, and no one is burdened, you know, more than others in how this is approached. And,
yeah. And
as you said, it's brand new. It's just being rolled out for the first time. Just as in anything else, there are, you know, hiccups here and there, and I truly think that the city is very trying to be responsive in addressing some of these concerns as they're being brought to their attention.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time today to tell us more about it and to keep us updated. And please do keep me updated, and I will spread the word with any new updates as we go along. Dante J. James, thank you so much for joining us today from the Office of Equity. And I'm sorry.
That's right. Equity and human rights.
Equity and human rights of the city of Portland. Thank you for taking the time. Sure. And let's hope for the best here and keep working at it to make sure it's all equitable for everyone.
Yes, well, you are most welcome, and thank you very, very much for the opportunity to have this conversation.
To find out more about the Arts Education and Access Income Tax, call 503-865-4278, 865-4278, and that spells, the last four digits are the number 4, ART. And they're open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And if you speak English or Spanish and have internet access, you can visit their site at artstax.net. That's artstax.net. And the number again to call is 503-865-4278. Before we go today, I actually want to read you guys something because I had, last week I asked listeners, I offered them a chance to win tickets to Portland Tyco by writing a comment about why they listened to the show on the Stage and Studio Facebook page. Well, Courtney Firefly of Portland won those tickets, and here's what she wrote. I listen to Stage and Studio because it inspires me to look outside of myself. It charges my imagination and makes me want to dive into the creativity of other outstanding people who add joy to my life. I do not live in a cultural circle or socioeconomic class that reinforces the performing arts. I want to keep plugged into that world as often as I can. Stage and Studio is a reminder to me that the artistic world is out there and accessible to me locally. Thank you, Courtney Firefly. That's it for this edition of Stage and Studio. If you missed any of the show, visit stageandstudio.org or download shows at iTunes. And don't forget to like us on the facebook.com/stage, the letter N, studio. Till next time, I'm Dimay Roberts.
How does the relentless passing of time shape our decisions? Do life cycles consume or empower us? Explore these questions through rhythm, dance, and voice at the premiere showing of Insatiable featuring the Portland Tyco Ensemble. Performances take place Friday, March 29th, and Saturday, March 30th, in the Lincoln Performance Hall at Portland State University. Again, that's Insatiable, a contemporary performance of Japanese folk art created by director Michelle Fuji, featuring the Portland Tyco Ensemble. More information can be found at kbu.fm/insatiable2013.
This is Joseph Gallivan, and this is Art Focus. My guest today is James Minden. He's talking about his new show, Real Unreal, which runs at Augen Gallery in the Old Town location through March 30th. Welcome to the show, James.
Thank you.
The what strikes you as you go into the gallery is a series of big black they look like canvases, black rectangles and squares with a sort of matte finish, and then lots of light coming off them. They look like tiny scratches. It's like holding up a record when you move it and the light is reflected in a series of sort of pizza slice shaped sectors. And as you move your head around, the sort of reflections move around. And then as you stand back, they look like 3D images. There are circles that seem to be some in front of each other. And you call them abrasion holograms, correct?
Yes, that's what they are technically. I actually call them light drawings as well.
Okay.
Because they come from a drawing, painting point of view, from a two-dimensional art point of view, and I do use drawing tools to help make them. They're very planned out in terms of how the light reflects, so that there is a specific pattern that I'm trying to achieve by creating the grooves so that the light will reflect in a very particular place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the most unique thing about them is that the patterns of light, the shapes that emerge from the reflections appear to exist in different places in space when you're standing in front of it looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very interactive, so that as you move, the images move with you and are related to you. So the source of the light, your location, and the piece are the three elements that determine what you see.
Right. So it's totally subjective in that sense.
Not totally, but no. Yeah.
All right.
I like to say it's equally subjective and objective.
Oh, okay.
There's certain parts of it that are, there's surface, and the surface has some texture to it. It is black only because I work in with a plastic material that's called PETG, which is fairly soft and fairly easy to incise to create grooves.